Bhagavad Gita is in his third chapter entitled Karma Yoga, text number 10. Sahayagya pracha sristva puruvacha prajapati anenatra savisyadvam esavustristakamadu. Translation: in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of man and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." Purport: the material creation by the Lord of creatures, Vishnu, is a chance offered to the conditioned souls to come back home, back to Godhead. All living entities within the material creation are conditioned by material nature because of their forgetfulness of their relationship to Krishna, to Vishnu or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are to help us understand this eternal relation, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, "Vedais cha sarve aham eva vedyo." The Lord says that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Him. In the Vedic hymns it is said, "Patim visvasya smishmaram." Therefore, the Lord of the living entities is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, 2.4.20, Srila Sukadeva Goswami describes the Lord as Pati in so many ways: Sriyapati, Yajyapati, Prajapati, Dhyampati, Logapati, Dharapati, Pati, Gatas, Chandaka, Vishni, Sattvatam, Prasidatam, Bhagavatam, Satam, Pati. The Prajapati is Lord Vishnu, and He is the Lord of all living creatures, all worlds, and all beauties, and the protector of everyone. The Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajna, sacrifices, for the satisfaction of Vishnu. So that while in the material world they can live very comfortably without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. That is the whole program for the conditioned soul. By performance of yajna, the conditioned souls gradually become Krishna conscious and become godly in all respects. In the age of Kali, the Sangatan yajna, the chanting of the names of God is recommended by the Vedic scriptures, and this transcendental system was introduced by Lord Chaitanya for the deliverance of all men in this age. Sangatan yajna and Krishna consciousness go well together. Lord Krishna's devotional form as Lord Chaitanya is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32 as follows, with special reference to the Sankirtan Yajna: Krishna Varam Tvisa Krishnam Sangupangasta Parasalam Yajna Sankirtana Prajaya Yanti Yisubeya Saha. In this age of Kali, people who are endowed with sufficient intelligence will worship the Lord who is accompanied by His associates by performers of Sankirtan Yajna. Other yajnas prescribed in the Vedic literature are not easy to perform in this age of Kali, but the Sangatan yajna is easy and sublime for all purposes, as recommended in Bhagavad Gita also, 9.14. When Krishna performs His pastimes in this world, we're speaking about His prakat lila, His manifested pastimes. And when Krishna is performing His pastimes in the spiritual world, they are known as the aprakat lila, or the unmanifested pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So it's not so easy to understand the pastimes of the spiritual world. Therefore, when we are focusing on pastimes, then generally speaking we focus on the pastimes of Krishna here in this material world. Because here in this material world we see that Krishna's pastimes are preoccupying themselves with dealing with so many demons and so on. And we remember that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Sikshamrita has described how the demons are relating to our own demoniac mentality. Just like Agasura was cold and ruthless, and therefore he took the form of of a serpent. Bakasura liked the sound of his own voice. He liked to quack and quack and quack about his own ideas and absolutely couldn't listen to anyone. With all his knowledge, just wanted to devour Krishna. Sakatasura was loaded up with all his attributes in this world, and this weighed him down, and his attachment to all his assets was just overwhelming him, and therefore he became a card demon with the desire to crush Krishna. Who is Mrityusa Vashyataham, who is ultimately the one who comes in the form of death to take everything away. So Sakatasura was not ready for that and tried to crush Krishna. So in this way, our sacrifice at this stage for the pleasure of Krishna is particularly meant for our purification, and that is our spiritual life. That somehow or other our focus is purification and mercy. Somehow or other, let us ourselves try to purify our existence. If we have any difficulties in spiritual life, know that it is due to impurity. Simply due to the impurity in our heart, that's it. There's always so many difficulties. Sometimes there are people who say, Maharaj, I have nothing to say to you because I don't have any problems. As if, we are only meant for problems. So tell me something nice. That sounds good for a change. Tell me something, good news or something, would be nice. But I can't say. I'm also, like everyone else, looking for purification. I can't say that I'm not looking for purification. This is simply how we spend our days. Every morning we rise, and again, trying to see what we can do today for our purification. And what sacrifice can we make? What service can be offered to Krishna? Whether it is an austerity or whether it is sometimes blissful, that depends on what the service is. Some services we like, some services we don't. But the point is to rise above that, to rise above the likes and dislikes, and to come to the point where one just simply engages in that service. For Krishna. The pleasure of Krishna. The main meditation is just on the service, just doing it very faithfully and dutifully. That is really our main point, our main point of focus, to just dutifully engage in our service. Every day there is a reason not to. Every day there is the mind, the body, or whatever conditions there are. Something. The people, the weather, it's something. There is a reason. Adhyatmika klesh, adhibhautika klesh, adhidaivika klesh. Threefold miseries are known as the tapatraya. These tapatraya are threefold miseries. Misery from mind and body, misery from other living beings, or misery from natural circumstances. So these are dictating our life, we're responding to them, and trying to avoid them. And they become excuses and reasons for not engaging in devotional service. But the real reason is that we didn't want to do it in the first place. And thank God we found a reason, an excuse why we didn't need to apply ourselves. So, sacrifice in every age, a different sacrifice. But in every age, it requires a great effort
on the part of the practitioner. It doesn't matter whether we are speaking about Lord Brahma, who found himself as the first living being in the universe, seated on a lotus in a dark universe, who heard from the Supreme Lord Ta and Pa, Tapa, or perform austerity. Or whether we are Indra, who is basically enjoying, who is like having a lot of enjoyment in his life, but yet also austerity to perform. Indra has also many duties. Yes? Indra, first of all, has to fight. Right? He has to be ready to fight, because after all, he is the ruler of the demigods. So when there is, when the demigods are under attack, then it's Indra who has to go in front. So yeah, that's the downside of being Indra. It's nice. The upside, of course, is that he sits on a throne and there's all these apsaras dancing for him and just calling out, Indra, Indra, Indra. How wonderful is Indra. Indra is the blessing for all of us. Indra, Indra. And every day, Indra, 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 Indra. So, naturally, Indra's life is has its pleasures. But then, we read in Bhagavatam that the demon Vritasura appeared, which was a terrible demon. A terrible demon. Actually, the reason why Vritasura appeared was because of Indra, actually. The story begins that Indra was seated on his throne, being glorified very much by so many personalities, and of course, you know, enjoying it. And just then, in the midst of that assembly, his spiritual master entered. And Indra never at that point bothered to come down from his throne and offer his obeisances. Mistake. The spiritual master did not wait and did not stand there ready to chastise him and point out his fault. No. He simply disappeared, which is worse. And he simply left. So then, you know, it was a major problem. I mean, the demigods didn't have a guru. And so that wasn't very good. So Indra finally said, what to do now? So Indra found a replacement. And he found a replacement in Vishwarupa. At least he could offer oblations in the fire on behalf of the demigods, so that at least the sacrifice could go on and get the benefits. So that was all right. But then they noted that this this Vishwarupa was actually related to a Daitya family, a demon family. And therefore he also offered oblations on behalf of the demons, not only to the demigods, but also to the demons at the same time. But Indra saw this, he realized that by these oblations the demons are gaining in power. And he panicked. You know, he thought, like, the demons are always waiting to attack us and they're gaining in power by these oblations that he is offering. I've got to stop this right away. And in the moment of passion, he just thunderbolt and decapitated that Brahmana. So that was maybe a little bit not so good. Brahmahatya is not recommended in the script. So the killing of the Brahmanas is not really a recommended activity. And in this way, Indra, it got a bit out of hand. And yeah, subsequently, reactions also came. There was Trasta, the father of Vishwarupa, who then performed a sacrifice and invoked this demon. Unfortunately, Trasta, while chanting the mantras and tried to create a demon that was able to kill Indra, made a mistake in the pronunciation of one syllable. And instead of chanting it short, he chanted it long. And therefore the meaning of Sanskrit is tricky. And, you know, the meaning of the whole sentence changed into, instead of the one who will kill Indra, the one who will be killed by Indra. So there was a little thing. But meanwhile, this ghastly demon appears. This ghastly demon appears. And this ghastly demon is Vritasura, who actually in his last life was a devotee, who was somehow or other cursed, although actually inappropriately so, but whatever, he was cursed by Parvati and therefore had to take birth as a demon. There's a very interesting fight that will come between Indra and Vritasura. And in this fight, it is Indra who is very attached. It is Indra who is attached to material life. And it is Vritasura who is completely transcendental and who is seeing himself completely on an eternal platform. And it is Vritasura who is there for the superior person. Although he was created as a demon, it turns out that he is not. It turns out that internally he's a devotee. And because from previous life a devotee was cursed, and now he is completely detached from the body. And life or death have no meaning to him. He knows that when he dies that he will return back to Godhead as long as he dedicates his life to the Supreme Lord. So, whereas Indra, he is also pious and performing sacrifice, but he is interested in material benefits. He is interested in prolonging his stay in the material world. To become Indra, one has to perform 100 Ashvamedha Yajnas. An Ashvamedha Yajna is a very huge thing. It is an enormous arrangement. It is said that I read a description in the Chandogya Upanishad about an Ashvamedha Yajna. It said that the manes of the horse become the clouds in the sky. The hooves of the horse are like the mountains, and his entire range, his body is like, it is something like the universal form. That's how it's sort of described, like the horse in that sacrifice represents all the opulence of the material world. So it wasn't just that they had to offer a horse, then they had to offer so much wealth from the whole world. So no ordinary man could offer such a thing. Only an extremely powerful, wealthy person could do an Ashvamedha Yajna, and to do 100, inconceivable. And like, to if one does 100 Ashvamedha Yajnas, one can become Indra. So Indra did all these huge sacrifices for material benefit. And everyone's doing sacrifices for material benefit. We also are. But it is these sacrifices that we have to gradually detach ourselves from and just make sacrifice for Krishna. So therefore, purification remains on our mind. And daily, whatever we can do, keep our head low, so to speak. Don't think that we are so qualified. It's like we're speaking simple philosophy. Yeah, I know that from Bhagavad Gita. And why am I speaking that philosophy? Because I'm simple. Yeah. Because I'm not not great or not a great and gifted personality who came directly from the spiritual world. No, just someone from this world. Who, whatever credits we have, we got them from Prabhupada's movement, as simple as that. That's where our credits lie. Whatever little service we were allowed to do, whatever the devotees asked us to do, and then we somehow or other did it. Ah, yes. And sometimes I liked it, what they asked, sometimes I didn't like it, and as they asked service that had more important, I also became more important. But then when I was very important, Krishna would just do the Purna Musika Bhav principle on me, or become a mouse again. You know that story of the yogi and the mouse, and who was not happy, wanted to be a mouse, wanted to be a cat, cat one who was not happy because of dog, cat became dog, dog was not happy because of tiger, tiger had received this body. Each time the yogi gave a better body, then there stood the tiger. So, I've given you body of a tiger, now what you want? Now I want to eat you. Pour the music above, be a mouse again. So, this story is the story of my life, I must say. That's my life, and I don't know about yours, but in my life, I always become a mouse again, and again and again. So these days, I try to just accept it. I'm a mouse. and nothing more. Therefore, our sacrifice is, it's mentioned here, the Sankirtan Yajna. And then it's a matter of taking shelter, because that's the part we don't do, that we all know it's about chanting Hare Krishna, that everybody knows, but how much are we doing it? We all know it's about distributing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. How much are we part of it? That we know these things. We know that this Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon, and it enables us to fully taste the transcendental nectar for which we're always anxious. Right? But we're not doing it. And then we are not enlightened. So the fault is ours. That's clear. The fault is ours. It's our selfishness. It is selfishness. There are so many ways to preserve selfishness, and that is an issue that we are, and we're living in denial also. Right? We'd rather, one aspect of selfishness is that we have a very selfless conception of ourselves. That's typical. That's a selfish thing. I am very philanthropic. I am very selfless. I'm dedicating myself for the good of many others. But we also see that scriptures are oftentimes mentioning that there is extended selfishness. There is direct selfishness and extended selfishness. So sometimes extended selfishness means that a man who is very charitable, who gives so much, is doing that to be glorified. So then it's extended selfishness. Public, so selfless. He gave everything away. Therefore, we are so great. Extended selfishness. So it is deep, the selfishness in us. So, therefore, one just should never think, now I am impure. We do not have to do a lot of introspection to try and, a lot of psychological self-analysis to try and, but how much selfishness do I really have? That's not required. A little bit, but not too much. We simply look for purification. Can I do some service? You see, if you see what Srila Prabhupada emphasized, it was simply, can I do some devotional service? What service can I do? It is there in that service that, that things become meaningful. It is in service that the scripture comes to life. It is in service that we are finding great inspiration. After, you know, like, I remember that in the beginning, when I started reading the Bhagavad Gita, I thought it was like a very deep book, you know, like full of revelation. But then after so many years, there's always something else to read, you know. Bhagavad Gita, ABC, let's read something else, something, almost like Bhagavad Gita. But actually, if we don't experience a lot of taste in the Bhagavad Gita, it means that we've lost something, we've lost that mood of looking for purification, because these are the words of Krishna. So every word of Krishna in itself is, one can read it in various ways. We can just go back now, and now we can go more slow. We just read all the, at the beginning, we read the verse in a storm, but we could also do it very slow. Prabhupada gives us everything. Saha, along with yajna, sacrifices. So along with sacrifice, praja asistva. Praja means dependence. Praja means that which has taken birth. Ja means birth. And praja means that which has taken birth and which is dependent and needs to be protected. So sahai yajna praja sista, having, along with sacrifice, having created all those dependent living entities. One can translate like that. So just in that way we can also read in a different way. We know that in the medieval Christian tradition there was a style of reading known as Lectio Divina, or sacred reading. And the whole idea was to read a scriptural text in a meditative way, not like passionately, not just analytically, but in a devotional, meditational way, and trying to penetrate, to read very slow, to read very slow, and to really try to meditate on each word. Yes, each verse is like that, very meaningful. There are devotees that memorize the entire Gita. And if one also meditates on the entire Gita, then it is very, very rich, very rich. And the other day I was thinking about the Gita, and I was thinking the Gita gives us different levels. It gives us first karma yoga, jnana yoga, and then bhakti yoga. And I was thinking, yes, in bhakti yoga, we know that devotional service is everything. That is our aim. But when we are falling short in that, when we are somehow or other having difficulties to taste the nectar of devotional service, then sometimes we have to retreat on the jnana platform. On the platform when you know, I'm not this body, I'm an eternal spirit soul. On the days that we're not so inspired, or that life becomes very heavy, that something unpleasant happens, then we can retreat on that. And we are not experiencing all nectar, but then we have, well, I'm not this body. So So this world is actually not so important. The karma yoga aspect is talking about engaging our senses. There are dasindriya, there are the five knowledge gaining senses, the five working senses, and to engage all that in the service of Krishna. We have to do that, right? We cannot, of course it's enough if we could be like Haridas Thakur and only sit and chant and remember Krishna, Sankirtan, Yajna, nothing else to do. Well, how long can we do that? Then we have to start doing other things, right? So we need to sometimes just move some material energy around, something, you know, like some people like gardening. All right, garden for Krishna. Some people like singing. All right, sing for Krishna. Some people can't keep their fingers still. All right, you know, move for Krishna. Some people, well, they like to organize things. All right, organize for Krishna. So then, suddenly we see karma yoga is coming in. So we are needing all these three levels, right? It's like we're doing devotional service, but some days we have to just rely on engaging our propensities. And other times, yes, we can be engaged in blissful service, and then again, we just have to... And then other times something happens that is really too much, and then we need to like just remember this. I'm not the body, I'm eternal spirit, soul, you know, like... So therefore, whatever happens to the body is not important. Therefore, whatever happens on this physical plane is just actually insignificant. And we need to remind ourselves when we get emotionally overwhelmed by material things. So we see the Bhagavad Gita is offering very practical solutions for our daily life. It is definitely establishing that devotional service, pure devotional service, is the highest platform. But when we fail to be on the platform of pure devotional service, all right, get philosophical now. Say, okay, good, well, you know, I mean, I'm not so philosophical, I'm more practical. All right, be practical. And just engage things with the senses in the service of Krishna. Like that. So we can see... I was just thinking about the other day how the Bhagavad Gita gives us like a full package of shelter, an interesting package of shelter, by these descriptions of Karma Yoga, which is this, the title of this chapter, and then and Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. You know, so because Krishna just gave us. Not by chance, the Gita in this format. He gave it to relate to us. And then if you're like, you know, do I still have to read the Gita? I've been around now for like, you know, a long time. Can I read something else? You know, I mean, the Gita. But the Gita actually is what we're going to need throughout our life. Because if we don't take shelter of the Gita, then risky business. Because we need it. These instructions to remain on the pure, in the pure position. In the beginning, we are very concerned about being pure. You know, we have to be pure. Later on, we realize that actually it's more important to place ourselves in the pure position. Yeah. See, because that's the part that we can do. Sarva dharmam paricheyam amikam saranam braja aham tvam sarva papevi mokshasham vasuchaha. Just surrender unto me, Krishna says, and abandon all varieties of activities. Then I will take away all the reactions of your previous sinful karma and so on. We can't take away our karma. That we don't do. We just do the surrendering part. So we just do the part of placing ourselves in the pure position. Then Krishna will arrange for our purity. It's not like, you know, now I'm going to be pure. I've decided. No, really. I read the Bhagavad Gita, I don't know how many times, and suddenly, you know, it dawned upon me. The purpose of the Gita is to be pure, and therefore I decided that from today on, I'm going to be pure. That's nice. It's appreciated. That's a good intention. But the next step is let's place ourselves in a pure position. And just make our position more and more pure. Purify it. If we purify our position, then the internal will follow. It will follow. Krishna will do it. Krishna will take away our rebel. So we just surrender and place ourselves in the pure position. So it's very interesting to think about these things. So the Gita, a simple verse like Sarva Dharmam Parichaya, a verse that everyone on the Indian train knows, right? Anyone? Sarva Dharmam Parichaya. You know, that the 4-year-old Indian kids, you know, can recite on Janmashtami. Alright, so every Indian kid can do it, right? But the meaning is very deep, very profound actually, because we can think about it. To be pure, it's Krishna will make us pure, but our business is to place ourselves in the pure position again and again, not once. We slip out of it again and again. Durganai patimena shaskala padagate muhu yat kripasvastidanena santasantavalam. My path is very difficult. My feet are slipping again and again. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami said. Yeah. I slip off the path again and again. So we keep on slipping off the path, and we have to again and again pull that foot back on the path. Again and again, take the pure position. And if we do that sincerely for a lifetime, then yes, then we gain in purity. Then gradually we become purified. Here is the means. Okay. Any questions? Any comments?
I was thinking that sometimes when you look at the Gita, and if you compare it to that mental devotional method instruction, it seems that those books are more practically showing Krishna consciousness as we practice it now. And therefore the Gita becomes a little hard to know in comparison.
Yeah. That's in the Gita also. The Gita is also very practical. There may be a few sections in the Gita about when the sun passes in the north and you leave your body at that time, you know, what are you going to do about it, right? I mean, we're not so powerful that we can decide when we're going to leave our bodies. I mean, when it happens, it happens. So, not every verse is maybe immediately applicable for us now, but many important verses. The unsuccessful yogi, remember? So, you know, like the other day I was in a marriage. I don't usually go to marriages, but both of them were my disciples, and both took birth in Krishna consciousness. So that's something, right? So felt like, and But you know, like all relationships, in the beginning, it's not always just so easy. So they were trying to sort of be at peace. So everyone was saying something. And what I reminded them, I said, like, you know, we should not only look at ourselves from this life, but we should look at ourselves from a continuation over many lives. And sometimes when you look at the devotees, you think, like, who were they in their last life? You know what I mean? You look around the room, you look at everybody here, and you think, like, God, who were they in their last life? What did they do in their last life to be here now? You know? To sit so close to Prabhupada. What did they do? Yeah? Were they also close to Prabhupada in the last life? Maybe so. What? Sometimes we don't know, but it's interesting to think like that, you know. Who were we in our last life? Yeah, that we are here now, what did we do? Yeah, and if we think of ourselves a little bit in terms of a continuation, then suddenly, yeah, you can take this whole what happens now a little less serious, you know what I mean? We tend to take it so serious. It's my life, and all this is happening to me, and it's so important. It's like, you know, it's everything because it's my life. You know what I mean? It's like nothing beyond it. There's lots beyond it. There's lots of lives beyond it. And who were you in the last life? And what went wrong also? And what went right? That here we are. If we were already devotees in the last life, then that verse applies. Right? The unsuccessful yogi. So see, there's a lot, the Bhagavad Gita is very relevant to us, very practical. Absolutely. It's not at all. No, there are many things in the nectar of devotion that are way over our head. You know, ecstatic symptoms further explained. Oh, look, you know.
Something about how to recognize and restrain from the path.
Recognize what?
How to recognize and begin to stray off the path.
How we begin to stray off the path. It begins when we are no longer careful to hear from the Vaishnavas, to hear especially the senior Vaishnavas. You see, there we are, then we are in trouble. And then we become proud. And it is pride that is that creates independence in us. As long as we place ourselves in a dependent position, a position where we are hearing from the Vaishnavas, then we are corrected in the association of the Vaishnavas. Then, you know, from time to time we hear something and I think, like, God, I never looked at one like that. Gee, you know? In that way, we get a little spotlight upon a dark spot in ourselves from time to time. So, it's in the association of devotees that we are being purified. It says in that verse, "Durgame patime indasya skala padakati muhuya kripa svastidani santa santavalam." My feet are slipping again and again. My path is very difficult, but with the stick of the mercy of the devotees for my support, I can stay on the path. So it's like by hearing from senior devotees, in general from the Vaishnavas, then one can become advanced. Therefore, our Bhagavatam classes are very important. Right? It's not like something, a luxury, but hearing Bhagavatam class every day with the devotees or the Bhagavad Gita class, you hear explanations about things that we already knew, but just slightly in a different perspective. God, I never looked at it like that. And suddenly, hey, so when we are turning away from the Vaishnavas, we think, then, it's that we are in trouble. Yes?
I was just thinking, the last verse in the Bhagavad Gita, when I read that, then I realize, it's like, what did I miss? Because he's like, he's so, he said, speaks, so, it's feeling like he's extended. He's actually excited to hear the conversation that he was reading, but I think, what did I miss? Because he's so happy to hear it,
The last verse, wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power and morality. That is my opinion. The verse before that, O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. Verse before that, O King, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure being thrilled at every moment. So these last verses are like that. Kind of really, it's very deep, very deep. And the Gita is just the perfect. It's perfect. It was just arranged for us. You have to understand that. It's designed for us. So you may not see it, but it's designed for us.
How do you develop this taste for hearing from my thoughts on other people?
Well, it says Shushu Shu Shadadana Shavasu Deva Kataru Chi San Mahat Sevya Vipa Pumya Tirtani Sevya. By serving the Vaishnavas, one develops Vasudeva Kataru Chi taste for hearing about Krishna. But in general, I must say, devotees, they sit through these lectures, right? And we come for a lecture. Really, like from far, right? Drive all the way to the other side of town for a lecture, fly like for a couple of lectures all the way, even to a cold place like Cape Town. You can suddenly leave Durban, come for a whole week to hear some lectures, to freeze. So I think there is some taste, actually, for hearing. It's because it's relevant. It's not just, it's sort of this Krishna consciousness is very relevant to us, and you can see it actually gives us a strength, right? Because there's great strength to deal with life too. So we get a lot of positive strength from this. We see that the devotees who are strong in hearing about the Gita, they are strong in life. They're very strong in life. We take it with us. It's not only sitting here, but it's like then we're out there and we can deal with the world in a totally different way. So we get actually a lot of positive result from it. So in that way, with time, it becomes more and more more wonderful. The other day I was speaking with a brahmachari who was leading many others, and he asked me a question. He said, like, you know, how can you be convinced, how can you speak in a very convinced way?
I was thinking that, well, you know, by being situated in something you can believe in. So first you got to find a condition in your life, a position in life where you can believe in, right? And when you are comfortably situated in positions, and yes, this is right for me, okay, then you begin to develop a conviction. So the conviction comes from being situated in a truthful position according to our nature. So, and then when we are properly situated according to our nature in a position of purity, then from there we can also situate ourselves properly in philosophical understanding and strengthen that and our conviction, and we become stronger and stronger, and then we become thirsty for knowledge because we feel this knowledge is actually, you know, making me strong against this whole crazy world that's bombarding me with all this garbage, and I'm here, you know, and I'm just getting like, it can't touch me. It doesn't touch me anymore because I am completely clear as to what the truth is. So in this way, this hearing, it's not just an exercise of, okay, you know, we're going to go through this process of hearing from the Gita because it's some sort of magic washing powder, you know, and washes all the stains out of the heart, you know. So, okay, here we go again, you know. You know, like, okay, all right, you know, yeah, wash it up, yeah, go ahead. No, it's like a whole, it's our outlook, right? It's our outlook, and with our outlook, it's the platform from which we deal with the world. And everyone needs that, you know what I mean? Everyone needs a platform, you know?
I mean, you know, I'm part of the Dutch Reformed Church, and therefore, you know, I know I'm right, you know, because it says so in the Bible, and therefore, you know, no one can say anything to me, because it's the only way, you know? And that's it, you know what I mean? And I'm right.
Okay, so everyone's looking for a platform. Go ahead.
I was just, you know, you were saying that everyone, you know, here is wanting to hear. But in my experience, and that's for temple programs, is that we can see right now it's not many. We have like 150 members in our community, so we don't have 150 members here. And on the Sunday program, for the kirtan, you'd have 100 devotees, but for the class, you'd have 20. So, actually, 30 or 40 are from Durban.
But if I got a lot of Cape Tonians in grains now. How do we go about attracting people to hear, to stimulate hearing? Well, when people are not so into the culture of hearing, that may be due to just being caught up in the busyness of everyday life, which is kind of overwhelming. You know, so much time spent at work, this and that, so a few hours at home, and, you know, like, it's just so little time, and then all the way going to the temple, hear a lecture as well, so that we don't like hearing, there's just no time.
how can we stimulate people, various ways. How is of course a practical question. I can think of some programs that I think would help. One is more house programs, you know, a program in everyone's home. Yeah. That's like the motto, you know, you leave the sooner or later every home has to be graced by a program. So start a culture like that, yeah, and just like work the congregation systematically, go to their home, and it will help, it will enlighten people. That's one way. Another way is make more recorded material available to people, yeah. Help them, give them more access to it, and somehow or other make these lectures more available so that they can also at home develop a culture of listening to it. Some temples have counselor systems. I personally am a rebel and I don't like counselors. But there may be others who do like counselors. Yeah, I mean, if they try to give me a counselor, I'm going to migrate to a part of the jungle where there's not much, where there's only smoke signals and stuff. There's no email. Yeah. But, you know. But yeah, when Moses doesn't come to the mountain, then maybe the mountain has to go to Moses. Yeah. That's also there. So, yeah. If people don't come to us, let's go to them.